Let's join in a spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, we have joined together today in the spirit of community to reflect on the things we hold dear and to be transformed, to be made new, to start over. We join together in common purpose because together we are better. Together we are stronger. Together we can care for each other and we can change together. We seek to bring into our gathering all of those who are ill and grieving, those who are in pain, physically or mentally. We send them prayers of healing and comfort. We pray safe travels to all of our far-flung members and friends. May they and we find joy and a deep well of satisfaction in this season of relaxation and playfulness. Let us hold this moment in silence. So may it be, and amen.
Our first reading is by Henri Nouwen, a Catholic priest who explored and wrote about the spiritual journey. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It is not to bring men and women over to our side, but to offer freedom not disturbed by dividing lines. It is not to lead our neighbor into a corner where there are no alternatives left, but to open a wide spectrum of options for choice and commitment. It is not an educated intimidation of good books, good stories, and good works, but the liberation of fearful hearts so that the words can find roots and bear ample fruit. It is not a method of making our God and our way into the criteria of happiness, but the opening of an opportunity for others to find their God and their way. The paradox of hospitality is that it wants to create emptiness, not a fearful emptiness, but a friendly emptiness where strangers can enter and discover themselves as created free, free to sing their own songs, speak their own languages, dance their own dances, free also to leave and follow their own vocations. Our second reading is by Starhawk, a pagan ecofeminist activist and author. We are all longing to go home to some place we have never been, a place half remembered and half envisioned, we can only catch glimpses of from time to time. Community. Somewhere there are people to whom we can speak with passion without having the words catch in our throats. Somewhere a circle of hands will open to receive us. Eyes will light up as we enter. Voices will celebrate with us whenever we come into our own power. Community means strength that joins our strength to do the work that needs to be done. Arms to hold us when we falter, a circle of healing, a circle of friends, some place where we can be free.
Once in Swaffham in Norfolk, a peddler named Chapman lived in a small house beside a towering oak tree. One night, the peddler dreamed that there came a knock on his door. When he opened it, there stood a saintly messenger. The messenger told him that if he went to London Bridge, he would find a treasure. After the dream had visited him several nights, he packed his things and walked all the way to London Bridge. There he stood upon the bridge for 3 days, looking about and listening for some news of his treasure. At last, the shopkeeper came out to him and said, "I've been watching you for 3 days. I beg you, tell me your business." The peddler told the shopkeeper about his dream, and the shopkeeper laughed. "What a fool you are, taking such a long journey on the sake of a dream. Peddler, last night I had a dream that I was supposed to go to Swaffham in Norfolk, and a place completely foreign to me. I dreamed that I was to go behind a small house owned by a fellow named Chapman. Next to the house was a towering oak tree. I dreamed that if I dug under that tree, I would find a vast treasure. Now, you don't see me running off to Swaffham just because of some foolish dream, do you? Were I you, I'd get myself home again." Chapman thanked the man for his wise advice and set off immediately for home. There he dug under a great oak tree and found a large box filled with a vast treasure indeed. There is wonderful treasure right here if I will open up to it in myself. This community, this congregation, is a treasure, and it holds many treasures. I believe in community, especially covenanted community, where there is an underlying promise that we are here for each other and that we are pledged to each other's welfare, even to each other's spiritual connection and growth. One way that we care for each other here at the U is through our community network. This group is a small subset of our senior lunch bunch that reaches out to people who have a difficult time getting here to the U or are in satellite communities. We want these people to know that we are thinking about them, that they are still connected, they and we. It is good for the soul to know that there is a group of people, our chosen tribe, that we belong. Carol McGough is part of that community network team, and she has some grand ideas about what our congregation could do to support one another. She came across a book called The Abundant Community by John McKnight and Peter Block and suggested that it could inform our work. Being a community enthusiast myself, I picked it up and enjoyed it quite a bit. McKnight and Block start by saying, "We have basically outsourced huge parts of our lives to paid professionals and large institutions." They say that this process has gone too far, that our institutions have reached their limitations, and it is time for us to take back our lives. They say that community is not just a nice to have, it is essential for our well-being. That all sounds great, and I find myself agreeing, but how exactly do we take back our lives? Who has the time? Well, here is something to ponder. Activist Jeffrey Kaplan recently wrote an article citing a 1927 interview with Secretary of Labor James J. Davis. Secretary Davis was very worried that the textile mills of this country could produce all the cloth that we would need for an entire year in just 6 months, and that only 14% of the American shoe factories, when we had shoe factories, were needed to produce a year's supply of footwear. But his great concern was that ultimately all of the world's consumer needs might be met by only 3 days' work a week. This was considered a serious potential problem, underscored by one business leader who said at the time, "Nothing breeds radicalism more than unhappiness, unless it is leisure." Kaplan explains that as the profound nature of this problem was being recognized in the late 1920s, America's business and political elite discovered an innovative solution. They found a way to defuse the dual threat of stagnating economic growth and a radicalized working class. They developed what was called the gospel of consumption, convincing people that however much they have, it isn't enough. Creating need where there was none, and manufacturing dissatisfaction. And so it was that the concept of consumerism took its earliest form. Like Kaplan, McKnight and Block believe that consumerism has been foisted upon us. They say that we have been making the shift from citizen to consumer for close to 100 years, and that this shift explains many of the economic, psychological, ecological, and spiritual problems that we suffer from today. McKnight and Block define a consumer as one who has surrendered to others the power to provide what is essential for a full and satisfied life. On the other hand, they define a citizen as one who participates in democracy, regardless of their legal status, one who chooses to create the life, the neighborhood, and the world from their own gifts and the gifts of others. Given a choice, I would rather be a citizen. Yet sometimes I feel that I've been played the fool, like I've been duped, like I'm a victim of historical circumstances. What I want is to feel empowered. I want to have a say-so over my life. I have a choice, and I would rather be a citizen. And so how do we get that pendulum to swing back to that 3-day work week? I'm sure that's what we'd all like to know. Not because we don't love our work and are grateful to have jobs, but because we dream about what we might do if we only had the time. We yearn to be able to take care of ourselves, our health, our neighborhood, our town and state, our whole country. We yearn for the time when our children and elderly could be cared for. We yearn for the time when our environment and the world could be made whole. We yearn for the time just to be creative. What are the things that give us satisfaction? McKnight and Block hold up 7 elements: health, safety and security, our environment, our economy, the food we eat, our children, and the care we give and receive. They are the responsibilities and the measures of an abundant community. While it's important to have good health care, doctors, and hospitals, they can only do so much. We know that how we live has a great deal to do with how healthy we are, how the food we eat, how much exercise we get, our genes, and that can be enhanced by belonging to a meaningful community and having a strong social network of care and support. It is important to have safe and secure neighborhoods, but these don't come from a large police presence. They come from knowing our neighbors and having people out and about on our streets. Again, this is well within our ability. McKnight and Block point out the irony that we pay the police to come to neighborhood meetings and tell us that our safety depends upon programs like Neighborhood Watch, minus the vigilantes, of course. The food we eat, how it is grown, how it gets to us, that's all very important too. Looking around, it seems that we are in the midst of a huge food revolution. We are demanding food free of poisons, petroleum, and processing. With our daily personal choices, we are actually forcing a huge industry to change, and to change in a pretty quickly. It's also important to manage our impact upon the environment. Our homes and transportation consume the most of the energy that we use, and these are things that we can control. I get so excited sometimes because I feel that we are at a tipping point, a major global shift toward harnessing wind and solar power and other forms of environmentally friendly power sources. We can all help to make this happen. And what about our children? We say that they need to be raised by an entire village, and yet immediately after breakfast, we drop them off at school and put them in the hands of a variety of professionals. Locke and McKnight say that there is not a youth problem, there's a neighborhood problem. Adults need to renew their sense of responsibility and capacity to join their neighbors in sharing the wealth of children. Our children, too, have gifts and treasures to share with us that too often remain locked up. What we had 40, 50 years ago was precious. It was life-giving. The change has brought us manufactured dissatisfaction, loneliness, and isolation. Where to start if we decide to reclaim abundant community that is before us? I think we start with gratitude, a sense of thankfulness for the gifts that we all have in our lives. It begins by abandoning that nagging feeling of deprivation and envy. It begins by acknowledging our dependence upon one another. McKnight and Block say that there are three keys to building the abundant community. First, that we focus on our gifts, like believing that everything that we need is right here, right now, in this congregation, in this sanctuary. Second, that we nurture our life together as a community or as a congregation. And finally, that we are welcoming and extend hospitality to others, to strangers, because they can and will enrich our community and keep it fresh and alive. We need to be able to trust one another, to be honest in sharing both our joys and sorrows. That is where our congregational covenant comes in. Maybe if we were able to take the risk to reclaim our birthright, we would be less fearful. Fearful for our safety, fearful for our children, fearful for our economic well-being, fearful about loneliness and our lack of belonging. Remove these fears, and stress just seems to evaporate and float away upon the clouds. The point is that so many issues of our day that require citizen attention and action feel so overwhelming and far away. But these things from the abundant community are right here at our fingertips and have immediate rewards. We can do this. The first step is in discovering each other's gifts. It's kind of exciting, I think, to think of the wealth and the gifts and talents that are sitting right here among us. And I was thinking, how about if we take a risk right now to test my faith in community and in this concept of abundant community? Remember those questions I asked you to ponder that are in your order of service? Take a look at them. Let's take a moment to personally answer those questions for ourselves. While you're thinking about those questions, I'm going to ask Carol McGough to come forward. So I want you to think about what your answers to those questions, and then when I give you the word, I'd like you to turn to your neighbor and share your answers with each other, one-on-one. I'll give you a couple minutes each, 2 minutes apiece, and then I'll let you know when the 2 minutes is up. Then I'll ask you, a few of you, if you would be willing to share some of those gifts that you have discovered with the whole congregation. Carol and I are going to demonstrate.
Morning, Judy.
Hi. This isn't working. Let me go over here. So, Carol, let's talk about our discovering our buried treasures.
Okay, let's.
So, have you thought about this?
A little bit, yes. Since you asked me to do this and sent me some of the questions, I thought about it. It's a little difficult because there's the kinds of questions no one has ever asked me before. So.
Well, can you share with us what are your gifts of the head?
My gifts of the head. There isn't really a specific area of expertise. I'm very much a generalist. So one of my great gifts of the head, as I used to say when I was a school teacher who worked with children with special learning problems, I know the first 10 pages of every textbook that's ever been written. So I know the first 10 pages of lots and lots of books. Page 11, I might get stuck. So I'm a wonderful Jeopardy player, but not so great with the depth. So that's my gift of the head.
How about your hands?
Well, I say that I'm a quilter, and I thoroughly enjoy the community that we have as crazy quilters, but I'm really more a fabric collector. Mm. And there I'm a conspicuous consumer, I will admit it. but I thoroughly do enjoy the work that we do as a quilter, but I much more enjoy touching the fabric than sewing it.
Mm. Hands on. And how about gifts of the heart? I know you have a lot of those.
Well, my particular passion is children, because as I said, I was a school teacher for 172 years. And in the 2 years that I've been retired, my focus on children has shifted a little bit to volunteer activities in the area of mental health. So the mental health of children and the mental health of people in general is really a passion of mine.
Wow. And how about groups and clubs? Who do you associate with?
Well, I'm very active in the local and state association of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'm very much involved in a project here in Essex County called Project Live that provides transition housing to homeless mentally ill adults and job counseling and ultimately jobs as well. Mm-hmm. And like all self-respecting former teachers, I belong to at least one book club, sometimes more than one. And I also have a number of social groups to which I belong, some here in the congregation and some outside the congregation.
Neat, very neat.
And how about you?
Well, my gifts of the head, I feel like I know something about the life of the spirit. And also, I know how to form groups and to get a job done, organize people.
I agree.
And my gifts of the hand, I know how to design and perform various rites of passage, coming of age, weddings, funerals, and I love to dance. So that's a gift of the feet, perhaps, rather than the hands.
That's news to me. That's wonderful.
And my gifts of the heart. There are just so many things that I feel that draw my heart. But I think I'm drawn to the suffering of the world. I think that's what opens my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm involved in a ministers association, of both the UU Ministers Association and our local clergy association here in Montclair. And I also belong to the Liberal Religious Educators Association. So those are some of the things that I do.
You're a busy woman.
Well, let's invite the congregation now to maybe you could turn to your neighbors and again share those few questions with each other. And it's It's maybe best not to speak to a spouse, since they probably know you pretty well. All right. So good conversations are being had. Let me invite you to share with the congregation, anyone who would like to, some of the buried treasure that has been uncovered. So Loretta, would you like to share? Let's all wind these conversations up. There's more time in coffee hour to share later. So Loretta is going to share with us.
I'm waiting for my friends over there. Is this on? Okay. I was up to number 3 down there, the gifts of the heart. And I really am always concerned about getting to policymakers and speaking truth to power, but I never really have. So last Friday, I had this wonderful experience of going to Trenton with several of my friends and making a presentation before one of the Senate committees on training for teachers. And the proposal that I made was that in every teacher training, there should be what I called advocacy literacy, a way for teachers and people who work with young children not to close the doors of their classroom. Because once the children get outside, and the parents are outside, you've got homelessness, you've got war, you've got all kinds of things that affect them, and you need to be able to speak truth to power. So the presentation I made was to have advocacy literacy in teacher training. And a number of the people on the council to whom I spoke were really so excited. A professor from Montclair State came over, somebody who was involved with the children's programs in the state came over, and I was scared to death, but I'm so glad I had that experience, and now I feel I can do it again. So that was a real growth for me, and I really felt so pleased about it.
Thank you. Any others? Any other gifts that were revealed? Buried treasure uncovered? I see, we have somebody back here.
Hi, I'm Mike McCann, and I found a real treasure here in Dion. What are the gifts of your head, Dion?
I told Mike that the gifts of my head were history. I love history, and especially American history and African American history.
And instead of hands?
Hands and feet, writing and dancing like Judy.
And she has a special announcement to tell us about. She's writing her family history and a novel.
Yes, we were talking about the connection of the my interest in. I'm writing a book about my family's history, which I guess also connects with what I care about a lot, which is race and identity.
And finally, the groups and associations, which I found so fascinating.
So, of course, there's a lot of groups that I'm a member of here within our community, like the Undoing Racism Committee. And I'm also very active lately in a group called Coming to the Table, which is an organization that brings together the descendants of slaves and the descendants of enslavers in order to help heal the racial harms.
I think we have time for one more.
I'm writing a play about my father, my relationship with my father, and it's been a labor of love because he died back in 1969, and I found things out about him from my mother and sister, and I feel a gift that I'm going to be giving him who's no longer with us in the flesh, and giving myself as a performance of this play, which will be done in New York City one night only. Hopefully it'll be extended to more nights. And I'd like to invite everybody to come and see this labor of love, because my father always encouraged me to be creative, to always write, and we had our problems, but he really supported me in this endeavor. I feel his voice is coming through. The play is going to be August 22nd. It'll be in your Gazette.
Thank you, Joel. All right. So many gifts of the spirit, of the mind, and of the heart. Lao Tzu wrote, "If there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. And if there is peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart." I'm hopeful, because many of the things that we've talked about this morning are within our power, and some are already in the process of changing. If we choose to create the life, the neighborhood, and the world from our own gifts, yours and mine, we become empowered citizens, and there is a deep joy and satisfaction there. Our closing words are from Lois Schmidt. "A great community creates conditions where people can fall in love. It is a place where you can make a fuss about one another. It's a place where we can ask, how did I ever live without you?" As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin.